My fellow Americans, let me say this with candor and honesty before I trip over the podium. Here comes the Colonel.
Oh, cut it out. Just, come on. Just cut it out. Who was that supposed to be? Gerald Ford? I mean, you know, where do you guys get these characters, huh? Oh, it's always one surprise after another around here. Well, welcome back to the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In just a little bit, we're going to get back to today's guest, Brian Miller, the president and founder of Nano Lab Technologies. And he told us earlier how it was starting out in business, breaking away from a major company that he worked for and starting his own operation, and the kind of the bumps that went with it, and what he sees the future of nanotechnology. He's a fascinating guy. He represents a number of different companies, and he's going to tell us about them, among them OmniProbe, Bruker AXS, XEI Scientific, and Left Coast Instruments. All some pretty interesting stuff. He's going to be showing at the 11th International Conference on Nanotechnology, August 15th to the 18th in Portland, Oregon, at the Portland Marriott downtown. This is the flagship IEEE conference in nanotechnology. Travels all around the world. Next year it's going to be in Birmingham, England. And this year we're real lucky because we have it in Portland, Oregon. Oh, and another one that I want to tell you about. This item just came in. The United States and Mexico Border Energy Forum is going to be held. Let me see, when's this going to be? The annual U.S.-Mexico Border Energy Forum brings together private sector and government leaders from all 10 border states, Mexico City and Washington, D.C. And this year, the forum starts Wednesday, October 26th, in partnership with Re-Energize the Americas. This looks pretty interesting. And as we find out more information about this, we'll be sure and let you know. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. Today, we've got a little voice of reason of our own I want to talk to you about, kind of just between you and me. And the madness that can go on in Washington, D.C. We don't get into a lot of political things because we're a science program, but sometimes the political and the science kind of cross over, and so there's something I want to talk to you about personally after we finish our conversation with Brian Miller. Before we get to Brian Miller, though, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set, and I'm going to round on the change jar here so we can throw some coins in the fountain. That's about the only way that he responds to anything.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Yes, I see we have awakened the spirit of the fountain. All right, spirit of the fountain, try your hand at this one. How many gears are there on an average unicycle? An average unicycle, how many gears?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the others.
Is that too easy for you, I guess, oh, spirit of the fountain? The number of gears on an average unicycle? No surprise, is it? There's zero. There's no gears on a unicycle. All right. On with our program. And our guest, Brian Miller, who is president and founder of Nano Lab Technologies. He operates primarily in the Northwest and represents a number of different organizations that he is going to that operate in the field of nanotechnology, and he's going to make them available to us to get a pretty close look at the nanotechnology conference going on in Portland, Oregon, coming up here shortly. So we're going to find out more about that from Brian.
Now, you represent a number of different companies, and you're going to be showing them at the 11th International Conference on Nanotechnology, August 15th through the 18th in Portland, Oregon, which is, of course, produced by IEEE, the Engineers Association. What are some of the companies that you're going to be representing there at the event?
Bruker Nano, which is the division on X-ray spectroscopy, working with EBSD and micro XRF systems. XEI Scientific has a very nice system for cleaning SEMs for improving imaging. OmniPro for doing lift out the TEM samples at site specific locations on a dual beam system.
Okay.
And nanophoton, which is a Raman spectroscopy system that works in a very fast way at high resolution.
Raman spectroscopy. Well, we've studied that a lot on this program over the years. Maybe we can take these kind of one at a time. Let's begin then with the nanophoton, the Raman spectroscopy. You say there's some new technology that they're doing that kind of improves the spectroscopy?
Yes. They developed a Raman microscope that works almost like a fax machine. It does an entire line scan at one point, so that instead of a dot, so instead of scanning and rastering, you're just doing one line scan, and all the lines are summed up, but you still get the full map image.
Raman spectroscopy has been around for a while, I think, developed in the 1920s or 1930s, or something like that, and there's continuous improvements. And how is this an improvement over the old Raman spectroscopy?
Well, it's about 300 times faster than doing a single point at a time.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. 300 times faster. Now then, help me with this. So who's going to be using this tool?
Chemist laboratories that want to get lots of data done. We currently have a system at Northwestern University that we use as a demo in the U.S. Northwestern had a particular need to collect a lot of data and collect it quickly as a basically a sample lab. They had their own work to do, plus they help other people with their work. So whenever you have a case where you have a single system and a lot of work to do, you want to get it done as quickly as possible.
Was this developed specifically for Northwestern University and then passed to you to be make it available to other institutions and organizations?
No. It was developed at a university in Japan, but same kind of thing. They just needed to get things done faster.
I see. Now, is Nanophoton a Japanese company, or is that an American firm?
It's a Japanese company.
Okay. And before we leave the subject of nanophoton, the Raman spectroscopy, with that new technology, 300 times faster, that's a head spinner, all right. What else would you want us to know about that?
Well, you don't give up in resolution, so we can still meet any resolution spec that you would expect from a Raman system.
Okay, so in picking up the speed at 300 times faster, you're not losing any resolution. The resolution then is still as good as it has been if you did them one at a time, I guess.
Correct.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to seeing it at the event. Now, XEI Scientific. What is it that you're going to be showing with XEI Scientific?
We have a system that basically ashes hydrocarbons in an SEM. It's just a very small system that adds on to your SEM or dual beam system and improves your imaging by reducing the carbon growth that you see in the SEM at low KV. So anytime below like 5 KV, quite often people, the longer they image, the darker it gets, and it can be rather annoying when you're trying to get a nice image. And this maintains that and controls it.
Okay, how long have you been repping XEI?
Oh, probably 5-6 years.
Wow, and who are the customers of this equipment?
It goes everything from laboratories to high-end metrology systems for semiconductors. So it's a pretty widespread of users. all the OEMs that make the microscopes are using this technology, and it's, they keep it in their demo lab so they can get the best imaging. And I guess that's the best proof of its usefulness.
Are you going to be able to demonstrate it at the conference, or are people going to have to go over to a lab?
We don't have a stand, but what we do have is, and I'm not sure if we're going to have the demo system there, but we do have a small chamber where you can put samples in. It'll clean up the samples. So we just put the Evactron and a roughing pump on a small chamber, which is also an additional product that you can get that way. So you can actually clean the sample, and then you can move the system over, called the Evactron, over onto the SCM. You can move them back and forth. You can either run it as purely on the sample, or you can run it purely on the SCM, or you can vary it back and forth. We may have one, a demo system, at the show.
Okay, is this similar stuff, Brian, to what you're doing with OmniProbe, with SEM electrical probing?
Well, so it is actually common to use it in the probing environment because it actually helps to improve the contact additionally. So it not only can you do the imaging, but for people who do a lot of probing, they like to use the Evactron in order to get better contact between the probe and the pad.
Okay, well, OmniProbe is a gas chemistry delivery an application, I guess. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so OmniProbe main products are the lift-out for doing PM samples. So you can take this, so like a semiconductor customer that has a defect at, you know, 20 nanometers, you can navigate to that site, cut it out, make a PM sample out of that section, and lift it out, put it onto a grid for putting it as a TEM. In addition to that, OmniProbe has created a OmniGIS, which is three gas chemistries that can be delivered specifically, minutely, below the SEM column or ion beam column in order to either etch or locally grow some material. The common ones are platinum, tungsten, and carbon for growing material. And those are also for welding your sample on. So you're basically welding a pole onto your sample, lifting it out, and then welding your sample onto a TEM grid. So very, very critical for anyone that's doing site-specific TEM samples.
Okay. And are you going to be able to demonstrate that on the spot, too, like you're doing with XEI?
That system is a little bit too comprehensive. I'll have the brochures and be able to talk and answer questions for people, but at the shows we don't generally. Unless sometimes the OEMs have their dual beam systems and they do demonstrations and we help them out. But in general, OmniProbe doesn't have a live dual beam system at a show.
All right. Well, the last company that is in this number that you're repping at the conference is particularly exciting to my friends at IEEE. They were telling me about Brucker AXS. What can you tell us about Brucker AXS and what you're going to be showing there with that?
So our EDS system, Brucker was the first to commercialize SDD technology, silicon drift detector. And we currently still have the fastest and highest resolution detector on the market. In addition to that, our EBSD is now quite impressive. We have new software and detection methods and alignment and auto routines that should definitely be looked at for anybody that's interested in EBSD. And we also have a new system for micro XRF called the M4 Tornado, which has a 12-inch stage on it, and anybody interested in micro XRF should definitely look at that also. It's a fully contained system. It sits on desktop.
Wow, fully contained, sits on a desktop. Microanalysis using silicon drift detections, I understand. Is that it?
Yep, exactly.
All right, and for those in the audience who don't know what we're talking about, could you explain why that's important?
It's very important if you wanted to know what your elements are. So MicroXRF is one analysis technique that can be used. Very interesting for semiconductors, for thin film, for people who are doing forensics. It's a very sensitive technique. Goes down to parts per million, and 30 micron spot on the sample. You can do NAPS, line profile. It's a pretty impressive system. There's no Brenzer along with that XRF system. Yeah, I'd like to say that I do have one other product that has a new product. Came out. Variascale has the variometric for polishing down silicon, so it can actually measure the thickness of the silicon to better than 2 microns on a rough surface. So for semiconductor customers, they're polishing down their chips to look at them. This makes things much easier. You don't have to, you can polish with a rough sample, and then you don't have to go to a fine grain and then try and get a measurement and then go back to the rough grain. You can just take the rough grain and just keep measuring while you're polishing so that you can accurately get to your endpoint.
Well, people have been saying now for a number of years that silicon is going to give way to nanotechnology, replacing it altogether so that the components can get to be smaller and smaller and smaller. Where do you see that going?
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, people have been saying for a long time that silicon is going to go out as the substrate for the to be making the microchips, and that it's going to be replaced by nanoparticles so that microchips can be made smaller and smaller and smaller. And that could have quite an influence, I think, on your industry and the things that you're doing. Where do you see that going?
I don't think silicon will ever go away. It's just too cheap, right? So every time, there's certain areas where other things have to be used, but silicon is always developed because it's the production solution, right? It's got the most equipment and the most R&D invested in it, and so you can't, it just doesn't die that easily.
So you don't see silicon as ever going away completely. Do you see it going away partially? Do you think that there will be nanotechnology particles that will replace a lot of silicon?
Well, they have to be made of something.
Well, yeah, like carbon nanotubes or something like that?
I don't see it going away completely. I see there's specialized markets, gallium arsenide and stuff like that, where people are using that. But even in that case, people are exploring ways of using silicon to make it easier to make those parts. So, I don't see silicon going away. I see it expanding.
Oh, you see it expanding. Okay.
The way things go is generally people end up following the paths of production that cost the least. And as long as they can file the technology problems, then they'll continue to produce things based on whatever's the cheapest. And silicon has all the equipment made for it.
Well, Brian, you've been a fun visit, and I thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. I know you're extremely busy. It's you've got a lot of things to do, and we're going to let you get back to work. But we look forward to seeing you at the International Conference on Nanotechnology, Portland, Oregon, the 15th to the 18th, at the Portland Marriott downtown. And thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Colonel.
Okay, before we get to the voice of reason, I want to talk to you a little bit about our own voice of reason. As you probably know, about a little over a week ago, Representative Barney Frank and Ron Paul led a bipartisan group of U.S. representatives
to introduce the first ever bill to legalize marijuana at the federal level. And that bill would leave it to the states to decide whether to legalize it at the state level or not. And if the bill were to become law, marijuana would then be treated like alcohol, where states decide whether to ban it or what restrictions, you know, to put on it. Well, the bill doesn't reschedule marijuana, which is currently Schedule 1, the most serious classification under the Controlled Substances Act, but it removes it from the act completely, altogether. And Representative Frank is quoted as saying that we're introducing a bill today that is very straightforward. We do not believe the federal government ought to be involved in prosecuting adults for smoking marijuana, said Frank. And he went on to say that is something the states can handle. We have this problem where those states that want to reform their marijuana laws are prevented from doing so by the federal government. And under this bill, the federal government will concentrate its prosecutorial resources on other things and respect any decision by a state to make marijuana legal. And a co-sponsor of the bill, Representative Cohen, said, "This has long been an issue of freedom for me." He said, "The people are way ahead of the legislators in knowing what the priorities of law enforcement ought to be. The federal government shouldn't be spending its time and money on marijuana, but on crack, meth, heroin, and cocaine. It ought to be up to the states and regulated like alcohol. And it should be a matter of individual choice in a country that prides itself on liberties and freedom." Close quote. Well, you know, the timing for the introduction of this bill is pretty interesting. Just days earlier, people marked the 40th anniversary of President Nixon's declaration of the war on drugs, with protests and vigils around the country. And earlier this month, the Global Committee on Drug Policy released its report calling for a radical shift in how we deal with illegal drugs, including calling for the legal regulation of marijuana. Well, oddly enough, the bill has been slammed by a key Republican committee chair and the Obama administration. The bill would have to pass through the House Judiciary Committee, but committee chair Representative Lamar Smith told the Associated Press there was no way that was going to happen. And oddly enough, the Obama administration. We probably remember the famous Justice Department memo of October 2009, which directed U.S. attorneys to not focus on producers and providers in compliance with state laws. And the Obama administration is now conducting raids at a higher rate than the Bush administration. And U.S. attorneys have recently been on a threat offensive, warning state elected officials their employees could be at risk if they approve the regulation and distribution of medical marijuana. So we think we're taking some steps forward, and oftentimes we instead are taking steps backward. So there's my little contribution to the voice of reason. Now let's get on to the real one.
And now we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Well, I'd say, you know, we see, you know, energy technology is perhaps the biggest engineering challenge of our time, and maybe the biggest problem the world faces in terms of how we supply the growing demand for energy in a clean, reliable way. But we also see it as perhaps the biggest economic opportunity in the world that deserves a lot of investment from the engineering and science community out there. And so we want to encourage everyone to make the investments necessary to bring these clean technologies to that critical cost crossover where they become less expensive and more abundant than the traditional ways of producing energy. And we think that transition could be a lot closer than people think.
My name is Brian McCleary. I'm the Clean Energy Principal Product Manager at National Instruments.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.